And now we look at the act of impeachment through the principles of political justice. A number of House Republicans argued impeaching the president so close to inauguration is bad. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy said in his speech on the House floor Wednesday that mob law interfered with constitutional law and impeachment would further fan the flames of partisan division.
Most Americans want neither inaction nor retribution. They want durable, bipartisan justice. That path is still available, but is not the path we are on today.
What path are we on as a nation? Does Congress have an obligation to punish the president for inciting rioters to attack the Capitol? If so, what punishment is appropriate? 800-642-1234. Lori Ringhand is a professor at the University of Georgia School of Law and interim director of the Dean Rusk International Law Center. Lori, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What do Democrats and some Republicans hope to get out of this? Because President Trump will leave office in 5 days.
Yeah, so I think the answer to that really lies in the article of impeachment itself, which explains why the elected officials favoring and voting for impeachment and hoping for conviction think this is so important. The article is, there's just one, and it's titled Incitement of Insurrection, which sounds very, very broad. And it is. What the articles lay out is, or the article lays out, it talks about how the president has a duty to ensure the faithful execution of the laws and to defend the Constitution. And then it articulates the ways in which the Congress believes that the president has failed to do that. And it's not just about the speech at the Capitol. The article of impeachment itself talks about the repeated pushing out of false claims about the election and the pressuring of state and local officials to disregard their duties and act in contrary to the results, the election results, and then ultimately includes the president's speech, which led to the violence at the Capitol and the effort to stop the members of the joint session from carrying out their duties in counting the electoral votes. So it together, what this shows us is that what the House is concerned about here is the precedent of this type of effort to discredit the electoral process itself.
You know, one law professor called this a snap impeachment, which is to the Constitution what Snapchat is to social media, a snap impeachment reducing the process to a raw brief and this partisan vote. Is that harmful to our nation?
Well, I think this impeachment happened much faster than the one a year ago did. And I think there are concrete reasons for that. The process has to, or the process can appropriately be responsive to the accusation. And what we saw a year ago when President Trump was impeached for the first time, that impeachment rested on a complicated set of facts. That, of course, was also about election interference, which I think is important. But the underlying facts were much more convoluted and difficult to tease out. They involved the phone call to the Ukrainian president or prime minister and the effort to try to allegedly pressure the Ukraine to develop evidence that would help President Trump or that he believed would help him in a possible run against Joe Biden. That was factually complicated. The impeachment articles this time around are very different in that everything that the impeachers are asserting here happened fully in public. Mm. The facts of what the president did aren't really contested here. So the process matches that. And I don't think that on its own terms is problematic.
But perhaps a hearing would have allowed for a formal demand for a response from the president.
It could have. And of course, the impeachment in the House is just the first step in this process. Uh-huh. It does it now, as you know, moves to the Senate, and the Senate is structured as a more of a trial. And this, the analogy to criminal law is flawed and incomplete in many ways, because impeachment is inherently a political, not a criminal law process. But the analogy often is made that impeachment in the House is like an indictment. You make a preliminary case. And then the process in the Senate is where the president is given space to answer that. So again, that itself is pretty, there's a lot of precedent for a process that works that way within our legal system writ large.
We are talking, if you're just joining us, with Lori Ringhand. She is a Constitution scholar at the University of Georgia, and we're looking at the impeachment process. Are you worried impeachment will become a routine action, that President Trump has been impeached twice? 800-642-1234 to join in. Lori, what does a retroactive impeachment trial mean? I mean, because, you know, the Senate is not going to do this, it seems, before Inauguration Day.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question. And there is a genuine dispute among legal scholars about convicting someone after they have left office. And of course, the impeachment has happened in the House already while the president was in office. But as you point out, any conviction in the Senate will almost certainly occur after the president has left office. And the weight of history weighs in favor of allowing that type of post-tenure process to happen. That we've done this before. We have had impeachments that have resulted in convictions after the person being impeached has left office. So it has precedent. Precedent is on its side. And the point of that would be that the impeachment penalties in the Constitution, if you are impeached and convicted, there's two possible penalties that the Senate can impose. One is removal from office. That would obviously be nonsensical if the person has already left office. And scholars who argue that a post-tenure impeachment process is not permitted point to that. Point to the fact that removal from office as a penalty implies that the person has to still be holding office. But the second penalty that's permitted under the constitutional text itself very explicitly is a bar to holding future office. And that obviously can be imposed regardless of whether a person is in office or not. So there's the legal question about a post-tenure impeachment. Again, the weight of history weighs in favor of doing that, although, of course, the number of incidences are very small. But there's also a political question about whether the Biden administration will want the Senate tied up in this during, you know, the famous first 100 days.
Right. But going back to ensuring the president doesn't hold office again, isn't that a separate vote following a conviction?
Yes, it is. It's a separate vote following a conviction, but it is forward looking, right?
Okay.
Which is why it weighs in. It's not nullified by the fact that the president is not holding office right now, the way the first remedy of removal is.
We're talking with University of Georgia constitutional law scholar Lori Ringhand about the president's actions in inciting violence on the Capitol and what rises to criminal liability. What do you make of Trump's second impeachment this week? What effects do you think it will have on the presidency, on Congress, on our nation? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Lori Ringhand here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thanks for being here. Let's get back to our conversation with constitutional law and Supreme Court scholar Lori Ringhand of the University of Georgia School of Law. We're examining the role of impeachment in our constitutional order and this possibility of retroactive removal of someone who has already left office, how that works. Would a trial and conviction bring closure to you? Has this moment fundamentally altered the role of impeachment in our nation? 800-642-1234. Lori Ringhand is with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's bring in Steve now in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve. What would you like to ask?
I have a comment first. This is really nothing but a continuation of the Trump derangement syndrome since we've seen from day one. A second impeachment, it's insane. It's a metaphoric guillotine that's being used. And my concern is we're seeing it in tech and we're seeing it across all our culture is this cancel culture. So is this going to continue by the Democrats moving forward of just canceling anyone that's conservative or right in the center to get them out of the public square?
The abuse of impeachment, Lori?
I think the abuse of impeachment process is something to genuinely be concerned about. I mean, it is an extraordinary remedy. And it would not be good for our politics if it became just a routine political tool. And I think one of the things that may distinguish that and kind of counter that temptation, and it certainly will be a temptation going forward. I think I mentioned this earlier. It's important that both of these impeachment movements involved efforts to discredit or interfere with the electoral process itself. The peaceful transfer of power is quite literally the most important thing we collectively do together as a nation. And what both of these impeachments share is an accusation that that's what's being interfered with. That is a categorically different thing than even vehement disagreement about policy issues or vehement disagreement about the appropriate role of tech regulation within our public discourse, which I agree with your colleague, that's a very difficult question about how to think about what power private tech companies should exercise over the public discourse. But those are fundamentally questions of public policy. And even strident and loud disagreement about those things is different than efforts to disrupt the very way that we collectively transfer power. And because I think that's why the people moving forward with impeachment think this is important to do. Because if we lose that, then it's very hard to figure out how we're going to live together as a society.
You're a Supreme Court scholar. In a Senate trial, Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts would have to decide his role. How do you see that happening?
Yeah, so in the impeachment trials that we've had in the past, the chief justices have been pretty consistent in viewing their role in a fairly procedural way. Chief justices do not want to get embroiled in questions of what this process should look like at a substantive level. So they approach their view as a not quite just ceremonial, but very procedural, kind of ensuring ordered debate that happens in an appropriate way, and leave substantive decisions to chamber managers, the people on the floor, the elected officials who are managing the process on behalf of their side of the debate. And that's pretty consistent, frankly, with how the Supreme Court has handled almost all questions involving impeachment. This is fundamentally a political process. And by political, I want to be clear, I don't mean partisan. If it slips into pure partisanship, like your caller mentioned, that's not great. But it is political in contrast, it's political in the sense that it is a political remedy for a perceived political wrong. It's not a legal judicial court process. And the Supreme Court has very consistently over our entire history declined the invitation to get involved in making substantive decisions about what that process is supposed to look like. And I think it's worth remembering why impeachment process is there. Our founders were very concerned with separation of powers and making sure that no one branch became too powerful. That's what they were very frightened of. So they developed this elaborate system of checks and balances, and the impeachment and conviction power is given to the House and Senate as one of those checks. And it's specifically intended to be, they viewed this as an answer, a way Congress can check a president who is misusing or abusing public power. The high crimes and misdemeanors, the high crimes here are crimes against the body politic. And that's precisely how the impeaching House sees these efforts to interfere with the electoral process.
We're talking with Lori Ringhand, a professor at the University of Georgia School of Law, and we're looking at the complexities of impeachment, how it informs the state of our nation today and in the final days of the Trump presidency. Lori, you know, President Trump broke several longstanding norms of the presidency while in office, including keeping his profitable businesses running, failing to release his taxes, attacking the credibility of our elections and our election processes. How do you see his tenure as changing the role of the presidency?
Well, I think we'll see some legislation to address some of those things that had been norms, but not legal requirements, like perhaps releasing more financial information or divesting yourself of potential conflicts of interest. But I think one of the things I do want to highlight here, because I think it's an unfortunate fact of where we've ended up. We just managed, in the middle of a pandemic, to hold an election in which more Americans voted than have ever voted before. We should be celebrating that. That's actually a phenomenal accomplishment. The hard work of our state and local officials across this country, thousands of people who got involved and tried to make this work, and thousands of new voters. Trump brought in new voters, and that's great. We want people to vote. And this is really a heck of an accomplishment, and we did it collectively. And it's really unfortunate to me that has been overshadowed and lost, because that's really something to be proud of. This country did that in these circumstances, and that's extraordinary.
Lori, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Lori Ringhand is a professor at the University of Georgia School of Law and the interim director of the Dean Rusk International Law Center, a graduate of the UW-Madison Law School. Just ahead, it is the news, and we'll talk with Dasha Kelly Hamilton, who was recently named the state's next poet laureate, about how she aims to encourage others to take up poetry during the pandemic. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.